I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the week in European football. I'm Dotton Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm David Cartledge.
On this edition, whatever happened to Dortmund's less sexy, more successful brand of football? It was supposed to work, wasn't it? Also, is Simeone the problem or the solution to Atletico Madrid's current malaise? Are its players the solution or the problem? And, ooh la la, how has the Kylian Mbappe story taken an unexpected turn? Andy, what's happening to Dortmund? They have been unbeaten this year in 8. They lose one game, and suddenly the wheels seem to be coming off. What on earth is going on?
Well, unbeaten in 8 sounds great on paper, but the devil is in the detail. And I think, you know, people wanted to believe in that break between the 2 years in the season, because, of course, this is where it all happened for Dortmund last season. They went into the World Cup and thus into 2023 in 6th place in the Bundesliga, and they came within a whisker of winning the title. Now, I think there are two parts to this. Firstly, Bayern have had their problems, as we've talked about extensively on here. But like points wise, they've done okay this season, even if they've been holding the team. And of course, Leverkusen have come figuratively from nowhere and been brilliant. So this has affected Dortmund's ability to catch up. So even improved form is not going to have the same effect that last year's second half of the season did. The other part of that is if you actually look at the content of those games, it's not been great. And Edin Terzic, the coach, they thought about firing him at Christmas. And in the end, they opted, as we know, for not one extra assistant, but two extra assistants given to him. And two really big personalities in Nuri Sahin, who was the head coach of Antalyaspor for a couple of years until he quit to come over to Dortmund. Would you quit without a promise that there might be future employment prospects of a slightly higher strata? Well, I don't know. We'll discuss that in a minute. And Sven Bender was the other one, who as well has history of winning at Dortmund. Again, a personality. And the idea was, in their traditional Christmas camp at Mallorca, they work on, and Nuri Sahin had a particular brief, make them better in possession. because it was all a bit chaotic and the individual quality of their players would get them a few moments that would win them some games. Obviously, this is unsustainable. It's the Manchester United under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer recipe, and that is not one for sustainable success. But not only did they slip up against Hoffenheim, who were 8 matches without a win, by the way, at Signal Iduna Park, Dortmund's home arena, but it was the way that it happened. So they started really badly and gave away a daft goal in a couple of minutes. Then they come back and they're winning at halftime when Malen and Schlotterbeck score. And then in the space of 3 minutes, they give away 2 completely daft goals. And they end up with Mats Hummels, who's not well enough to start, by the way, because he had gastroenteritis, stuck on to play up front. That's how many ideas they've got. A centre half playing up front because he's tall. And that is how short of ideas they were.
Emre Can as well, almost centre forward for some of the match.
Well, it's better than him doing whatever he was doing at the back earlier in the game, you might
sure
argue.
About that. He missed some sisters, didn't
but,
he?
But, you know, for them to be put in that position, for those players to be put in that position, is absolutely a knock on the coach.
I think it was just risk averse, safety first stuff. I think that's first and foremost. If you look at that unbeaten record, you actually peel the layers back from that. There's a lot of draws actually scattered in that. There's 4 wins from the last 14, if you want to really phrase that, their last haul of games and what have you.
Against not amazing teams either.
No. Mm. A 0-0 draw at with Heidenheim as well. Mm. You know, the things like that thrown in. Still got all the top 7 teams to come as well. And we touched on this when Terzic came in on the pod. And I think there was a few impressive signs at the start, but this move to bring him in was very much, look, just get us Champions League qualification. That is first and foremost. You know, everybody knows Dortmund's financial limitations, financial issues and what have you. Get us that and then it's considered job done. There's a risk now that they might actually miss that. I think because they've been so poor. I think they're unwatchable at times. I think they're a really bad side to watch.
Yeah.
The very insecure side. And it played into that game against Hoffenheim. When somebody turns the screw against them, puts a little bit of pressure on them, you can, all their frailties come to the fore. You can clearly see that. They're not a team who can hold on to a lead and what have you there. And that's where they are. So I'm not surprised by any of this, what's going on.
Is it fair to put the blame as much of the German press is doing on one particular Jadon Sancho?
Well, I think Sancho is more a symptom than the actual problem, I think, because we talked about how in the first half of the season they rejected the possibility of bringing him back because they didn't really feel he was a fit. They didn't really feel it was the right time. They felt it was too expensive, even though there's a lot of love for him there. And why do they end up changing their mind? That's the real question, isn't it? They end up changing their mind because they don't have a plan, because they don't have a straight line in terms of recruitment, because the team is chaotic on the pitch, being a reflection of the way it's being run on the bench and in the boardroom.
And this sounds,
that's the problem, isn't it?
This sounds mad to say when you think of Dortmund 8-10 years ago. You know, when they came to the fore, when they returned again, you know, I'm talking about the Klopp era and what have you. They were always held up as this incredible club. And when it comes to recruitment, when it comes to buying low, finding these players, selling them for ridiculous prices to all of the Europe's classic elite. They haven't done that for a number of years now. Sancho, obviously, an outlier there.
But who could you sell out of that team now? I don't think there are a lot of candidates, are there? Whereas, like, if we go back into the recent past, you go back Bellingham, Sancho, Haaland, you can keep going back.
I generally don't. You could go back to, you know, people like Kagawa, Götze, Lewandowski as well. You can go right back. Mm-hmm. And their recruitment is nowhere near the level of that. And I completely agree. I've had to pause there for a second while you've been speaking to think of somebody they could sell. And I honestly can't think of it. You think of Daniel Malen. They brought him in as well, I think, for a relatively high fee for Dortmund. Mm. And they're now scratting around, clearly, hopefully somebody in the Premier League comes in and gives us 50, 60 million for him. He hasn't played like a 50, 60 million player. And Dortmund need to function, not only for themselves as well, to get the Champions League qualification or what have you, and also just be a good side, but they also need to function so these players can develop and they can sell on. That
and if you can't develop them, you can't sell them for enough of a markup.
Exactly.
So they might sell Marlon this summer,
yeah,
but they won't get the markup that they hope, will they?
Absolutely not. And this is what I mean. And this is when your recruitment, when your philosophy has completely fallen through at all levels. So yeah, this is a sizable impact on the club as a whole.
And Sancho is short term, because they know really they can't sign him in the long term unless United do them the deal of all deals. And maybe they'll have to, because he looks so far off it at the moment. That is the problem. I mean, if you're a Dortmund fan who wants them to sign Jadon Sancho at any cost, perhaps the way that he has played so far is good news for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously the idea of United sending him to Dortmund is to regenerate him so he has some sort of transfer value at least. So they're not making a horrendous loss on him. Who is buying him the way he's playing? It doesn't look fit. I mean, I don't think it's all his fault, obviously.
No, I don't either.
The way he's been handled, I think, is quite poor. But he just doesn't have the tools to succeed and to give Dortmund what they want at the moment. Really, what they could really do with is bringing him out of the team for 3-4 weeks, getting him on some sort of remedial fitness program. Because at the moment, it looks like he's kind of playing from muscle memory and he just can't get to the pace of the game.
It seemed to work when he returned. I mean, let's just talk about Sancho for a moment.
I wonder if it did.
Oh, you don't think so?
I wonder if it did. I think there are a few little moments, and because it's Sancho coming back to Dortmund, we want to believe.
Mm.
There was never like a consistent, he's running this game, which is what he was doing in his first spell at Borussia
Dortmund. But Dortmund were a completely different side then. The Dortmund that he left is completely different to the one that he's returned to.
And he had better players around him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Man United sent him to a club. If the goal from a United end is to revitalise him and crank up his market value and what have you, they've sent him to the wrong club for that. I know it was all nice, the thing of, Sancho going back to Dortmund, the place where he shone, where he made his, where he made his name. That's a beautiful story. But the reality of it isn't a good environment for him still to be in because of the state that Dortmund are actually in.
Do they panic? Because they're still in the top four. They should be able to get something out of this season.
Well, I think they've got two problems. Firstly, having lost this game with Hoffenheim, which is a must win, really, if you're wanting
Hoffenheim
to make the top four.
Looked like they wanted it more, is what I thought.
They just looked a bit more competent. And they looked a little bit more organised and they saw the game out quite easily, I thought, when they were 3-2 up. And given that the nick that they're in and that not one of the better teams in the Bundesliga, that is a real embarrassment for Dortmund. The thing is, that has now left them, 6 points behind Stuttgart. Even though Stuttgart didn't win at the weekend, they only drew with Köln, a game that they should have won. So it could have been even worse for Dortmund. And of course, the other team that did Dortmund a favour was Bayern. Because that late Harry Kane goal is 27th of the season in the Bundesliga, beat Leipzig and left Leipzig a point behind Dortmund in fifth, Dortmund a fourth. So without that, Dortmund are not in the top four anymore. And as David says, still got to play Stuttgart, who are a better side than them. Still got to play Leverkusen, who are a much better side than them. Still got to play Bayern, and Bayern away, forget it. They never win that game, do they? I mean, we can pencil in our 4-5-0 here, can't we? Mm-hmm. And they've got to go to Leipzig as well. So unless something changes really, really quickly, I just wonder if they're a game or two away from that. They have to bin Terzic because they cannot go on like this. You're saying they still have a chance of getting to the Champions League. They do still have a chance, but they're going to run out. They're going to make that chance diminish if they just let it drift. Now, we talked about the fixture list. If you get to the bottom end of the season, last couple of games, and obviously we can't really talk about gimmies for Dortmund because they had the gimme of all gimmies to win the title last season and they didn't do it when they were in much better nick. But the last few games of the season, you've got Mainz in there, you have Darmstadt. They need to set themselves up for that. But the thing is, the way they're playing at the moment and the way they're defending in particular, and you've got to bear in mind that Gregor Kobel, arguably their best player, is the goalkeeper, is out at the moment and will be for a little while. They could have played themselves out of contention by the time they get to the winnable matches. That's the issue, I think.
Of course, if you're a Leverkusen, you must be looking at all of this and think, a plague on all your houses.
Well, if you're Leverkusen, you haven't got binoculars modern enough to see Dortmund from where you are. And they're not looking backwards, are they? They're looking forwards. You know, you think last weekend, you know, got to a Bundesliga record unbeaten run of 33, going past Hansi Flick's Bayern, who were obviously a force of nature a couple of seasons ago. And I think that is one of the damning things if you're Dortmund, that you think, if we were a little better run, we could be what Leverkusen are. But we're not. And I think you look at the coaching, that's why it comes down to the coaching, I think. Because you look at Xabi Alonso, and there are defenders in Leverkusen who didn't look up to elite level, who let them down time and time again. You can look at Hradecky, the goalkeeper, you can think the same thing. He is making those players into title winners. Whereas I think there are players with the potential to be that at Dortmund who are not coached well enough to be. Look at Nico Schlotterbeck. They're like, to me, who looks like a good footballer. He doesn't look anything near a defender, which is terrible when you're a centre-back. And, you know, you feel every time he's in the opposition penalty box and scoring a goal, he's making up for the mistake he's either made before or he's going to make later in the game. And the fact that Xabi Alonso, as an authentically excellent coach, has coached players to be the best they can possibly be, I think puts into real, like, crystal clear vision exactly what the problems at Dortmund are.
At the risk of David not speaking to me for the rest of this pod, I do think it is worth examining when a coach mentions sexy football. David's not a Geordie, but I do think they're digging themselves a hole. Why on earth make a statement like less sexy, more successful? Because you're begging, aren't you, for it all to fall apart.
And especially when someone like Edin Terzic has come from the terraces at Borussia Dortmund.
Well, there you go.
He knows that the way you play, the passion with which you play, is so important. Mm. You know, the thing is, they never took to Thomas Tuchel. Not because he wasn't successful, because he had some moments of really quite good success there, but because they didn't feel...
It was robotic.
Click. They didn't feel the warmth, exactly.
It was robotic. And I think Dortmund need to play a certain way that ingrains that feeling on the terraces. And right now, they're extremely, extremely flat.
Do you think... I'm talking in a utopia sense, not in a realistic sense here. Two sort of damaged brands in Dortmund and Pochettino could be quite good for each other.
Yeah, well, that's a shout.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Diego Simeone is well, supporting his players at Atleti, but they are struggling at the moment, aren't they, to make themselves or to make something of their season. There's a lot still to be played for, and we're coming to the Copa del Rey in a moment or two, but nevertheless, he is supportive of his players. A coach that you've seen in the past being very, very angry at his players when they're not playing the way that he wants them to play. What's going on?
Yeah, he's supporting them, and I think above all, he's protecting them. I think he knows that right now everything at Atleti is pretty fragile. I think they had an incredible start to the season. They had an incredible finish to the year. They really were looking special. But I think the squad limitations are now coming to roost. Very much, it's not something that, you know, wasn't discussed. A lot of people were aware of it. They looked at Atleti's business in the summer. It was seen as disappointing yet again. And, you know, some of those players even left in January as well. Such was the failure of them to integrate. And Atleti have found, and Simeone are found once again, their backs are against the wall with it because there's not much there to work with. I think the confidence has gone out of the squad a little bit, and it's up to Simeone to use that incredible motivation that he brings to the entire club. I think I always say he's keeping this club afloat, and he doesn't just keep the team on the pitch afloat, but the entire club as well. I think without him, it falls down. So now he has to motivate them once again, and that's why we see a different demeanour from Simeone on the touchline, in the press room. He says things that he perhaps wouldn't have before. He's not slaughtering the players as openly as he used to. I say slaughtering, you know, criticising them when they're on the pitch and everything. There's been a lot of high-profile incidents of, you know, Yannick Carrasco before losing the ball in certain key areas and such. And Simeone's been very animated about that. He's less animated now because I think he knows that where the team is currently at.
Yeah, I guess that's the amazing thing to me. So you see them going to Almeria last weekend, a team who are bottom of La Liga, who haven't won all season and came very, very close to doing so with the last kick of the game against Atleti. But before that, I think you look at the fact that Atleti gave away the lead twice, that Alvaro Morata missed some golden chances, including an absolutely unmissable one in stoppage time that he nevertheless did miss. And at that moment,
he's got a miss in him, though, hasn't he?
Oh, he definitely has. But when that goes over the top, Simeone, rather than like tearing his hair out or whatever, turns around like the sort of kindergarten teacher, does a little clap and, come on, lads.
Good effort.
It's not your fault. Yeah. It's not your fault.
And I don't think he's lost the fire. I just think he has to operate with a different tact towards the players now.
But is that what Atleti need now?
Well, I think, what other option does he have, I would say? Because if you look at it, David talked about the squad limitations. I mean, what was clear after this extraordinary 2023, because, you know, people have an idea of Simeone and what he's like, whereas it's a little bit more evolved than that. He's changed, hasn't he?
If you're still resorting to the old stereotypes about Atleti, then you haven't watched three games they've played this season.
Yeah, that's right. I think we can get to their...
markedly different team.
We can get to their flaky defending in a minute. But I think when you look at the fact that they had this amazing 2023, as David was saying, which really saved Simeone at the club. It sort of rehabilitated him, switched the focus away from him maybe planning an exit, or the club maybe planning an exit, to let's keep this going, let's give you a new contract, this is still good, we can renew, we can move forward. And as David says, the idea really of him as a sticking plaster for the investment they are not making as well. But it was clear, even when it was going well, the back end of last season, they cannot keep running Antoine Griezmann and Koke into the ground. You know, two players who were, especially Griezmann, obviously, were phenomenal in 2023. But you can't keep leaning on them this heavily, because even Griezmann at some point is going to say, right, his body is going to say enough is enough. And that is exactly what has happened. You know, he's not been in the team for the last couple of games. He won't play the second leg of the semi-final against Athletic, it looks like, which is a huge task, by the way. And I know, David, you want to come to that in a minute. But the fact is, what can he do when he's got like such limited resources? He can't really tear out the players because he needs them. He needs every single one of them. So he needs to work with them, even if it's like not his ideal right back or his ideal centre back or whatever. He needs to work on the confidence of those players. So there's got to be a little bit more carrot and a little less stick than traditional Simeone, if that makes sense.
Mm. There's never any talk anymore of who Atleti are buying. It's always about who they're selling. And as that happened again in January, and there was a lot of talk about Correa potentially going to Saudi Arabia. That persists. And there's other players as well who's been linked with moves.
And they would have got a loanee to replace him, wouldn't they?
Exactly. And it'll be another summer of that. It'll be freeze and launch. You know, take the centre-back position is a great example. We're not living in the Godin-Miranda era anymore, this incredible pairing. It's very patched up. We've got Alex Witsel brought in, defensive midfielder, identified as basically replacing Thomas Partey, who went to Arsenal for a short-term fix, of course. Even that hasn't worked out. He's had to play at centre-back because at centre-back, Jimenez is constantly injured. He always has been. Everybody knows this. The club knows this. Simeone knows this. So he pushed for a centre-back, couldn't get one. So he said, right, I'm going to make Axel Witsel a centre-back. And he's done okay there. He's not being terrible. But look, this isn't a long-term solution. He's got Savage there, another aging defender.
So there's no pace really in that defence,
exactly. Soyuncu came from Leicester. He's already gone. That didn't work out either. I don't know how many years now has gone past where they haven't addressed this centre-back position, which has been a troubled area for a long, long time now. And that just goes to show how the club operates. It wouldn't be surprising me if they sold another centre back and not replaced them. That's just how they operate and what Simeone has to deal with. He's had to convert so many players' positions, and people always laugh and say, oh, Simeone is converting him to a defensive midfielder, or he's converting him to a fullback. Sometimes he has to. Llorente, Barrios, Riquelme, they're all being converted in different ways by Simeone. Not because I think he really wants to, it's because he has to. It's the only solution that he's got.
See, if he was your Jesus, he'd be sitting there going, look how clever I am.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so smart.
Exactly. And he maybe needs to go the Harry Redknapp route and just, not put a centre-back on the bench and just say, hey, come and help me here. Get out the window.
Hasn't it been Griezmann that Andy referred to that has been the key to unlocking the problems that Atleti have had?
Yeah.
And last season, for example, coming off the back of the World Cup, he arguably saved Simeone. Then,
well, he's the ultimate Superman player, isn't he?
Yeah.
Like the thing is, Simeone and him connect in the way they see football, in the way that football's played, in the unreasonable amount that they're prepared to put into it. But, of course, that means that eventually, as we said, you're going to hit a brick wall. And it is really interesting. I think if you go throughout 2023, you talked to David about how the demeanour of Simeone had changed. He was talking like he was Griezmann's agent for a lot of last year. He's the greatest. He's one of the greatest players in the world. He's maybe the greatest player who's ever played for Atletico. And it's just like, yeah, all right, we get you like him. And you said that last week. Yeah. It's fine. But it just felt that he has felt like, I owe you so much.
Yeah,
you don't really see that between a coach and a player.
No,
you
don't. And look, Griezmann's Superman. He absolutely is, but only to an extent. Again, he can't play a centre back. These areas do need permanently fixing. You can't just keep sticking plasters everywhere. They have to sit down at some point, and it's going to be in the summer. And Simeone really has to say, right, where do we go as a club? Do you want another season of this, or do you actually want to kind of revamp things and go in a certain direction where I can, have a real squad to work with and talent level to work with?
Then why doesn't he say that? Because what we're hearing from him at the end of that Almeria game was, I'll take responsibility for everything. Why doesn't he turn it round and say, look, the club's got to take responsibility
I think he does. I think every January, every summer, I think he does. But the club just say, oh, but there's no money there. But they're taking, look, this is then another discussion about what's going on at Atleti at the top and who's running Atleti and the people are, and some shady characters, shall we say. So, there's certain limitations as to what Simeone can ask and what he can get.
But the resources now, compared to, I realise they're running a much bigger wage bill, of course, but not as big a wage bill as a couple of years ago. If you look at the money they bring in, really due to him, they were never a consistent Champions League club before Simeone got there. They didn't win stuff before Simeone got there. And now they're in this enormous stadium that they sell out a lot of the time.
It's the house that Simeone built.
Exactly.
That stadium wouldn't be filled if it wasn't for what Simeone has done, as well as everything else. Certain players wouldn't come to the club as well, but they're still in this beg, steal and borrow mode. This summer comes up, they're going to have to sell somebody for 40, 50 million if they want a new centre-back and they want a new striker. And they'll go, oh, there's your 50 million, but you have to get two players with that. Oh, and by the way, you are losing one of your best players as well. And that is the way that they operate. So something needs to change there as a whole. You look at the game against Inter. Inter were just so, so much better than them.
They were, weren't they?
In a completely different place. And a lot of it came down. I mean, Inter are a fantastic unit, fantastic team. But if you look at where Atleti slipped up, there's a lot of individual errors, a lot of slips, a lot of mistakes. And that comes down to not having that required quality there.
It comes down to being knackered as well when you have to play all the games.
Yeah, yeah. You get more complacent. But I think the difference in quality, you can never question Atleti as a unit, as a team. They're always together. Incredible bond. They all work for each other. Absolutely. But it's quality. At some point, Atleti need more of it.
When you talk about that quality, I mean, these two games, really, you talked about the second leg of the Metropolitano of the game against Inter that's going to come up. Obviously, that 1-0 advantage for Inter would be more of an advantage if we were still in the away goals era. I still think it makes Inter heavy favourites.
I do as well. I think Atleti concede there, definitely, as well. I think both teams score, but Atleti will not keep a clean sheet in that game. Yeah, I'll be shocked if they did.
No way. And I think if we come to shorter term, the one that they really could win, the Copa del Rey, which of course they haven't won since, 2013, against Athletic. I think because their away form is so bad, the chance has already gone, I think. Also, Athletic are maybe a better team than them as well.
Athletic are a better team than them right now. There's something about them in the cups as well. Athletic love a cup, and you know everybody knows about Bilbao and the momentum that you know that they have in that city. I think when their team is performing well, and they're performing very well,
one hell of an away game, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. I would not want to be facing Ernesto Valverde with any team, let alone this Athletic team that is young, exciting, very confident at the moment, and could cause Atleti a lot of problems. I definitely hope we can talk about them in a couple of weeks on the continent a little bit more, because I think it's a great story what's going on Athletic right there under Valverde, who's kind of persecuted to Barcelona, you would say. So that's a horrible game for Atleti to have to face. So, and
we don't normally predict. So you've given us two predictions there, potentially, with Atleti. On the one hand, later on today, they will meet Athletic in the second leg of the Copa del Rey, and we're predicting that it will be a miracle if they come out of that.
Atleti are going out of both cups for me, Champions League and Copa del Rey. I'm happy to stand by that.
What have they got left to play? And why does Diego Simeone
make the top four?
Yeah,
because it's close between them and Athletic. And I think if you look at the point differential between Atletico at home and Atletico away, that makes it really tight, I think. Really tight.
And this comes down to what we've just been discussing. They've only got a squad to focus on one competition, and that is going to be a big finish in La Liga. They can't handle all these competitions.
Top four. That's the best they can hope for this season.
Yeah.
Why does Diego Simeone stay?
Because he loves the club.
He loves it so much.
He loves the club so much.
And he could walk into loads of other jobs, couldn't he?
But he would walk straight out of them pretty quickly.
The grass isn't necessarily always greener. As bad as Atleti, he has got a lovely life there in terms of knowing the club and how it operates and what have you, rather than, say, getting thrown into the madhouse that is Chelsea.
I mean, did you see that Amazon series on him? Like the barbecue he has, the Argentinian barbecue he has at home. I mean, come on. You ain't moving anywhere. Like if you got that.
Frey Bentos. What? That's what I could think about.
Maybe if you're Charlton manager.
Arguably, still talked about as the world's potentially greatest player. Imagine this situation. I'm talking about Kylian Mbappe now. And we know that his future will take some kind of a decisive moment come the end of the season, one way or another. But imagine you're PSG, you're 1-0 down, and you take off arguably the world's best player. What on earth is going on there with Kylian Mbappe?
Well, that is the question, isn't it? And something that he wasn't very happy about either, because he'd been quite angry the week before when he was a sub away at Nantes. He didn't take that well at all. He came on as substitute, scored in that game later on. After winning a penalty, he put it away. And then he starts a home game against Rennes. They're not playing particularly well. But I don't know why when you 1-0 down, you take off your best player. And Luis Enrique framed it afterwards. Well, we're going to have to learn sooner or later to play without him. And so it kind of makes you think, doesn't it? Are his, to paraphrase Marcellus Wallace in Pulp Fiction, his Paris privileges revoked? because he was untouchable before this.
Mm.
And in some ways, it felt all the same because
name on the sheet.
Exactly. People wondered how he would be received. You know, the first home game, how would he be received by the ultras since it had become clear that he'd told the club that he was going to leave? And yeah, he got a good reception. And then it didn't really happen. Now, I kind of understand where Luis Enrique is coming from because he will have to work out a way to play without Kylian Mbappe. And maybe he's thinking, well, Ligue 1, let's be honest, we've got it won anyway. So maybe I need to have a little bit of experiment. Interestingly, talking of winning and scoring penalties, Gonçalo Ramos, in what can only be described as a complete manufacturing of a penalty, did that and got PSG a draw in the end of that. So maybe if you're Luis Enrique, you can sit there and go, my sub worked. But I think it's really interesting in terms of how you project as PSG. Like you want to have that stardust. You want to have that magnetism that you've always had. Now, it's not always about saying, well, you know, this is the best thing development-wise for the team, is it? You know, you've got to remain relevant. And you've got to be trying to win the games. And surely that means leaving Mbappe on the pitch.
I mean, he's not gone yet. He's still there.
He's still getting paid. You might as well make the most of him.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have quite a long time. You're going to have pre-season and what have you, or, you know, to work out how to play without him with a new player that you probably bring in. I just don't think now's the time to say, oh, we're moving on from Mbappe when there's still so much to work out.
I guess the question is, right, that it's been suggested in France, has he got instruction from upstairs to reduce Mbappe's playing time? Now, Luis Enrique being Luis Enrique, I think he's the kind of guy who's just going to do what he wants.
I do as well. And I do love this quote. And I laughed when I saw it. I was like, that's the most Luis Enrique quote I've ever seen. When I want to play him, I will. But when I don't, I won't. You could tell me who said this and I'll be all right. That's Luis Enrique.
Straight out of Pulp Fiction. Yeah, that is Pulp Fiction, through and through.
And yeah, it is why I love him. But I can imagine it's why a lot of people hate him as well. I still think you've got to play it Mbappe, because this might be a nice little segue. This is all becoming a little bit political, isn't it?
It has. Do you know what? Before we get to that bit, David, I think the thing is, we were talking about this earlier, Don, off mic. The fact that PSG has to have a certain star quality, as we were talking about, they have to get not just a replacement, as David was saying, but a star replacement. You need to treat your stars nicely. Because otherwise, football's a small community, isn't it? If you're a potential star player looking to get in there, and I think whatever you think of the way that Kylian Mbappe has conducted himself since he signed his contract extension at PSG, and I know a lot of people think he wants to run the club, he's selfish, he only cares about himself, he behaves like a brat. Well, all of those things may or may not be true. But what is also true is the way that PSG have handled it. The way they tried to force him to leave last summer, the way they left him out, said, unless you sign a new contract or accept a transfer, then you're not getting in the team. And he essentially had to pay to get back in the team by leaving his loyalty bonus on the table.
It's just bonkers.
And it is. And now this is happening. If you're a star player, would you think, I'm not really into this. I actually quite want to be like respected and of treated course. Well. And paid well. And like, obviously you're going to be paid well at PSG. But the idea that, you know, if you have a disagreement with a club, they're going to essentially try and break your career. How much of a turnoff is that for the biggest players?
You see, I don't think it's about money. When you're on that level,
It's about respect and recognition.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't it?
And really money, about the money reflects that respect, doesn't it?
Exactly. It's not about the money itself. It's about the respect that money implies.
Yeah, and given that, and dare I say it, Mbappe, for French football, he's bigger than PSG. Mm. For French football, he arguably is the most significant.
But PSG have respected him, though. They've given him everything that he's wanted and more. Really, when it comes to, you know, bringing in certain players that he wants, the direction of the club, and he's had a big influence on that, no?
But they did that a year late.
All right, okay.
They did that a year late, and by that point, he's thinking, yeah, this isn't going the way I wanted it. Yeah. You've broken all your promises. Because I think they made promises to him that they knew they couldn't keep. You know, a regeneration that wasn't entirely possible while Neymar was still on the books. And fortunately for them, the opportunity to get rid of Neymar miraculously opened up with Saudi.
So when he signed that contract, are you saying he was promised the world on the
big...
Right, okay. Because I think that this is my big problem with Mbappe as a player. And I think a wider, you know, you...
A lot of people have it.
A lot of casual football fans will have that same... And say, why did he sign that contract? I think, personally, even if the earth and the moon are offered to you, I think he should have said, look, my career isn't going to go on an upward trajectory by staying here and signing this contract, no matter what they give me.
Yeah, I think he could have been smart enough, because he's clearly a very intelligent bloke.
Yeah.
He should have seen that it wasn't possible for those promises to be fulfilled while Neymar was still there and they had no way of getting rid of him.
Yeah.
So I think he believed what he wanted to believe to a certain extent.
Absolutely. And I think if he had genuine designs on being the best player in the world, in being the face of football, with Ronaldo going to Saudi, Messi going to MLS, if he had genuine designs on that, then I think he should have been stronger to say, like, no matter what they throw at me when I go in this room, when I meet El Khelaifi, when I meet whoever it may be, I'm going.
But resisting that pressure is one thing. Resisting presidential pressure is something else.
Because... Let's come to that in just one moment, because the one thing I would like to... It's an important point, Andy, but the one thing I would like to ask you, David, who did it benefit that Mbappe decided to stay at PSG? Who did it benefit?
Who did it benefit the most?
Yes.
PSG.
Exactly. So now they've treated him subsequently now over the last few weeks with huge disrespect. Imagine that. He sacrificed a lot to stay at PSG and now they're taking him off. They're bringing him on as a sub like he was, you know, a teenage player or something like that. It's how you leave the club that's important.
But the weird thing is, Don,
and you're only as good as the way that you leave the club, I would have thought.
And the Emir of Qatar is still hoping against hope that he can get him to sign again while he's in France. How is he going to do that when Luis Enrique's doing this?
There's no chance of it. Now, let's bring in the presidential thing. What on earth has President Macron got to do
with this?
This
was extraordinary. This was a real surreal gathering and situation.
So we've got this meeting at the Elysee between Emmanuel Macron, Nasser Al Khelaifi, the Emir of Qatar is there, and Kylian Mbappe's there as well this week. And so a lot of people
are
looking at that, and honestly. Now, as we say, the Emir is asking for something. He's trying to get Mbappe to still stay because, you know, this is a man who doesn't take no for an answer. And fair enough, until the ink is on the Real Madrid contract, why wouldn't you keep trying to re-sign him? Macron had a big role in getting Mbappe to re-sign for PSG. And, you know, maybe, just maybe, that's the reason why Mbappe didn't want to be photographed next to him at the World Cup final in December later that year, because he's like, this is all your fault. This is all your fault that I signed for this again. It's still a madhouse and they still haven't got the players I want and we've still got Neymar and it's a mess and we're not going to win the Champions League and all the rest of it. But Macron has been very keen to use Mbappe for political capital. It's just that Mbappe had kind of worked that out and has tried to distance himself from that. But again, he's doing PSG another favour by going along to this. And he's continued, actually, to possibly against his better judgment, do PSG favours of, you know, I will leave that signing on money on the table in order to play. I will not announce my move to Real Madrid while we're still in the Champions League because, you know, that might demean us a little bit. You know, and they're still saying to him, well, you know, to show the appreciation of your time at Paris, maybe you could give us a little bit of your signing on for Real Madrid. It absolutely beggars belief. But I think the really interesting thing about this meeting between Macron and Mbappe, El Khalifi and the Emir, is that the French domestic TV contract is running out at the end of this season, as we know. Now, we've talked about how PSG might replace Mbappe. It's not just about them, is it? How can the French championship, how can Ligue 1 replace Mbappe? Because trying to sell that product, and it's been very difficult negotiations because really the league has completely burnt their relationship with Canal Plus, who were their long-term partner, is very, very sticky there. They have got to find a acceptable level of new TV deal without the biggest star trumpeting it. So how do they sell it nationally and internationally? Now, I suspect Macron has been saying, because obviously it's for the good of the French economy if they can do that, that like the implosion of the value of Ligue 1 is not a great thing. They will be saying to the Emir and to El Khalifi, who runs beIN Sport, of course, who've held some of the rights and sub-licensed in recent years some of the rights to the French championship, how about you make a bit of a run for it? Because PSG need there to be a good TV deal as well. You may think, oh, this only matters to the other clubs. So, you know, maybe we're even looking below Rennes and Lyon and Marseille and all those. Maybe it matters the most to Lorient and Strasbourg and teams like that. But actually, it matters to PSG as well. Because if the value of the TV rights in France plummets, PSG are stuffed FFP-wise. Absolutely, yeah. Stuffed.
Their wages to turnover ratio is still sky high in the 80s, 90s as well.
But could this be the ultimate FFP workaround? That essentially the owners of PSG buy the major part or a major part of the rights to French football, sort of giving themselves money and putting themselves in a position where FFP-wise, everything's fine.
You're a genius. Yeah. He's a flipping genius.
He should have been at the meeting.
Yeah, well, I think he was.
Are they geniuses? And that's what I'd ask.
But the point is valid, that arguably Mbappe was at that meeting, not just for PSG, but arguably for the whole of French football.
Yeah.
He represents, you know,
totally.
The reason why we talk about Ligue 1, he represents that, doesn't he?
And we'll definitely come back to talking about how do they replace him, not just as a player, but as a star. And that goes for the league as well as for PSG, I think.
And look, La Liga had this issue as well when Ronaldo and Messi left. So there's precedent here of how they moved on from it. And they've struck gold with Jude Bellingham, who is, I think, really ascendant to that level.
Yeah.
And then obviously Mbappe is going to go there as well. So La Liga might see itself that this might have a kind of financial renaissance of some sort. Because if Ligue 1 is going to go down, the league is going to, they're going to go, oh, we want a bit extra cash. We've got Mbappe. Oh, we've got Bellingham now as well. Oh, Vinny Jr. as well. He's quite a big star as well.
Do you think the logical next move is for Javier Tebas to leave the presidency of La Liga, go to the LFP, take over from Vincent Lebrun, and then just sit there complaining about all his best players again, Nick?
It might be. Somebody should ask him because he really loves talking and I'm sure he'd give you a great answer on that as well.
And his genius is lost on us, I'm telling you. Okay, we will return to this, obviously. But it is a time to ask both of you to recommend a game of the week for us to watch and a food pairing to go, because we need something to eat as well. Do you want to go first, Andy?
Oh, we always need something to eat.
Of course. And let's start with that, if you like.
Well, you know what? We're going to start on Sunday afternoon. I think it could be a roast with currywurst side, perhaps.
Ooh.
Because
we're going to Germany.
You go for currywurst every week. And I hope a listener is going to pick up on this and say, Brass, do you eat anything else?
Yeah, well, anyway. Like, I think you can have sauerkraut for Sunday lunch and it's fine. Anyway, like, little clue there. We're going for a derby on Sunday afternoon. 2:30 kickoff UK. FC Köln against Bayer Leverkusen. Now, Leverkusen, as we said, absolutely unbelievable. Maybe even the best team in Europe. Certainly, them and Inter, if we look outside the Premier League teams, if we look outside Manchester City and Liverpool, are as good as it gets at the moment. And maybe Arsenal, of course. But Köln have had a lot of difficulties this season. Changed coach with a very popular Steffen Baumgart leaving at Christmas and being replaced by Timo Schulz. They're kind of improving a little bit, but not really quick enough. To me, it looks like the best they can get is the playoff position, the relegation playoff position, because there's quite a gap that's developed between third from bottom and fourth from bottom, with Union and Bochum improving in recent weeks. So, like, this should be an absolute walkover. Like, Leverkusen are so much better than them, I can't even put it into words. But it is a derby. But when you play at the Rhein-Energie-Stadion, the Müngersdorfer, like, the atmosphere there is unbelievable. Derek Ray, I'm sure, will be there singing along to Loch Lomond slash the FC Köln anthem. It's one of the anthems of European football. So don't just turn this on 1 minute in, right? When you watch it on television, make sure you're a good 5 minutes early, because you'll see the cheerleaders doing their human pyramid and then coming down to form the sort of corridor to welcome the players on the pitch. And the bit where they have the anthem, everyone's singing it on the in the stadium, and then they kill it and the fans keep singing it. It's one of the things to enjoy.
It's like bubbles, isn't it?
Level up.
Well,
one of the things to enjoy in European football is magnificent.
And going back to your Currywurst, or whatever you want to call it, the headline in the, you might have seen it, Daily Star today was "Let them eat flake."
Was it?
Yeah, because the boss of Cornflakes says, well, if you can't afford to eat food, eat some cornflakes for lunch, for breakfast, and for supper, which proves the point that David was just saying about you, let him eat currywurst or whatever he wants to. So what would you recommend then, David?
Yes, Sunday, 8 p.m., San Mamés Athletic Club versus Barcelona. The Ernesto Valverde game. Obviously,
why is it called that?
Well, because the way that I think he was treated when he was in Barcelona, yeah, like some sort of jobber who'd kind of stumbled into this job. In theory, he actually did really well there, and he's performing brilliantly at Athletic Club right now. And I think, look, he's not a vengeful man, but he is really going to want to win this one.
But maybe he's on the inside.
Yeah, exactly. Athletic games against Barcelona at San Mamés down the years have been sensational. There's so many classics there. I'll never forget that howling, windy, rainy night when Fernando Amorebieta was just chasing Lionel Messi around the pitch all night, trying to side them down, skidding about everywhere. Got him a few times. Messi kept getting up. We had a Ander Herrera brilliant finish as well. There's just so many great moments from the two clubs down the years.
Earlier in the season in the Copa del Rey.
Yeah, exactly. When they come together, just a great, I think, you know, the Catalan Basque element as well. It's it's fantastic. It really, really is. So that's a must watch, I think, on Saturday night. And Athletic as well can. So Atleti play earlier in the day. If they don't win, Athletic can go level on points with them as well, which is also a bit of an added incentive. Athletic are really a team to watch when it comes to the, you know, the final stage of the season.
What are you eating?
Give him a break.
So I think with us being in the Basque Country, with us being in Bilbao, we have to go for a little pincho.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I say little, but what I'm putting on the pincho, you know,
what is a pincho?
It's not so.
It's like Basque tapas. Basically.
Yeah. They're all just think of a bar. Little plates of food there, and they're all on sticks. And what you can do is, when you're in bars, you take them off there and everything, and at the end, before when you settle your bill, they just count how many sticks you've got on your plate, and they're like, all right, cool, you've had that many. So yeah, I tell you, we're going to go for something heavy. So my favorite is usually morcilla on bread, so the Spanish blood sausage, essentially some black pudding on a bit of bread. Yeah. It works, it really does.
It's quite a sausage heavy episode.
I was going to say, there's people listening to this like holding their bellies, just go, oh, great. But yeah, that's my recommendation.
It's a northern thing, that black pudding. Trust me, I've tried it. It's a northern
thing. All right. I'm gonna go for a ham piece pudding stotty next time. There you go. Next time on the pod, I'm going for that.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to On the Continent. And do make sure that you join us again tomorrow for Ask OTC, where we'll be answering all of your questions about the latest news from the world of European football. And do make sure you subscribe in your podcast app so that you never miss an episode.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.